Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Cheater and the Rude. You know what? Last week's Cheater and the Rude special edition with Where the F Are We? Kevin Janis and Bernard Poulton was so well received. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again because the topic tonight is Iran, and Iran is in the news. There is potentially a new deal being struck as we speak. That's a text coming from the Shah of Iran right now, telling me that things are going to be happening. So we want everyone to know what is going on there. Where the F Are We is a funny and informative look at world affairs. And this is one of their latest episodes. Check it out. You can watch and follow them on Twitter at WTFAW Show and individual at Kevin Janus, JANUS, and Benari Lee. And of course, this is Cheating on the Rude. We're going to be back next week. We've got a lot to talk about next week. Next week, I'm really excited because I'm working on this project about the psychology of money, which has been keeping me out of your faces for a while. Follow me at Jeff Chrysler. Follow me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Where the Fuck Are We? The foreign affairs show that asks the three most important questions for Americans.
Where the fuck are we? Why the fuck are we there? And what the fuck does it have to do with me?
I'm Kevin Janis.
I'm Bernari Poulton.
Now you might be asking yourself, who the fuck are we? Well, Bernari Poulton is a hilarious comedian and writer. He's an adjunct professor at Cal State Fullerton, and he's a master sergeant in the U.S. Army Reserve, and we affectionately call him G.I. Jew.
Kevin Janis, in addition to being a very funny comedian and writer himself, is a fancy New York-based lawyer. He's a Canadian, and like all Canadians, he's an expert at being foreign.
So we have a lot going on in the news right now, but one country is dominating the headlines, at least in terms of foreign affairs. So today, where the fuck are we? Here's a hint.
Dulcet tones of this country. Kevin, where the fuck are we?
Ladies and gentlemen, this week we are in Iran.
All right, so where the fuck exactly is Iran?
Well, Iran, obviously, is in the Middle East. But man, it's in a hot sandwich between Iraq and Pakistan. And it also shares a border with Afghanistan.
Oh, that's super awesome. So, totally stable region, great neighborhood, nothing terrible ever happens there. You know, I think that when we think about these countries, and especially Iran, a lot of people just have the image of Iranians in the street chanting death to America or always something terrible happening, but it's a pretty old country. I think we could probably benefit from a little more history.
Yeah, I'd say Iran has a rich and vast history, but how do we get through 4,000 years of Iranian history without putting everyone to sleep?
Well, that's easy, Kevin. The way Americans like all their news, in highlight reel format. This ain't history. This is the Blitz-dury.
The Persian dynasty kicks off around 550 BC, and put it in the books, it's two centuries of solid performance for Persia.
During this time, Xerxes the Great tries to live up to his name by trying to conquer Greece. Oh, but he fails!
330 BC, here comes Alexander the Great, and he could go all the way! But he's dead at 33, and most of Persia ends up as part of the Greek Empire until about 140 BC.
Persia rebounds, and after an Arab invasion in the early 7th century, Islamic rule takes hold, and by the 9th century, they even have their own Persian language called Farsi.
Persia burns through different dynasties over the next few centuries, but uh-oh, here comes Genghis Khan and his Mongol hordes, and the Mongols take it all. In 1220, the Mongols take it all.
It's centuries of war until Persia pulls a meta-world peace and officially changes its name to Iran in 1935.
Oh, but they backed the Nazis, and tough break for the new Iran. Next up, a series of brutal overthrows and coups and a power struggle with the British over oil. Things are not looking good.
But here comes the USA's new BFF, Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, to the rescue, bring stability and modernization to Iran throughout the 60s and 70s.
Not good enough for the fickle fans of Islamic fundamentalism, the Shah flees to the U.S. as Islamic militants demand he face trial.
1979, Iran hostage crisis. It all comes down to this, Islamic militants versus Western power. And down goes the Shah, down goes the Shah.
The Shah is dead, Iran in crisis. Who will win control?
It's the Ayatollah Khomeini. The Ayatollah wins it.
The Iran-Iraq War kicks off the 1980s with a bang, lasting all the way to 1988. The hostages are released, the Iran-Contra affair takes center stage, and Iran is named a state sponsor of terrorism.
What a decade for Iran!
Iran is rumbling, stumbling, bumbling through the 90s. But in 2002, Iran recaptures the spotlight when President George W. Bush names them as part of the Axis of Evil.
Earthquake, student protests, fights with the International Atomic Energy Agency, and the election of Mahmoud. The Holocaust never happened. Ahmadinejad!
Ahmadinejad!
They really took the crazy ball and ran with it.
Which brings us to today, with the newly elected moderate and reformer Hassan Rouhani at the helm. Will Iran be able to pull off an upset? Only time will tell.
It's gonna be one hell of a season.
And that's the Blitzstream. The Blitzstream. I love it. Okay, so, new leader Hassan Rouhani.
Yeah, well, you know, this guy has at least acknowledged that there might have possibly been a Holocaust, so I guess that's progress.
Yeah, that's progress. What else do we know about this guy? First off, I got a fun fact for you. Hassan Rouhani, not his real name.
Huh.
He changed it. Yeah, from Hassan Feredun. Nobody knows why. But Rouhani actually means cleric in Farsi. So people think he might have done it to help his political career. I mean, he's running in a theocracy, right? So nothing like being called cleric in a theocracy.
Yeah, so he's basically just, he's pulling a Walter White and now calling himself Heisenberg.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's hope not.
that's true. That's a bad analogy. Bad analogy.
Come on, Benari. Here's another fun fact about Rouhani. He was involved in Iran-Contra.
Oh, well, that is fun. For those of you who don't know, the Iran-Contra affair was under the Reagan administration, and that's when the administration basically was secretly selling weapons to Iran and then funneling that money to Nicaraguan rebel Contras who were carrying out a guerrilla war against the Sandinista government of Nicaragua at that time. Turns out Congress didn't know anything about it, and it was totally illegal. That's fun. But so here's the secondary goal of the Iran-Contra. The Reagan administration was really trying to secure the release of American hostages held by pro-Iranian groups in Lebanon, and they were trying to influence Iranian foreign policy in a pro-Western direction.
Yeah, so when National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane went to Iran to discuss the deal, Rouhani was one of the two officials he spoke to about the weapons transfer.
Wow, that is a fun fact. You know, that's actually pretty interesting because he was also Iran's top nuclear negotiator from October 2003 to August 2005. And that was during the time when, of course, they were labeled as an axis of evil by the Bush administration. Of course, in 2005, Rouhani actually quit the Supreme National Security Council after Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad!
Yes, after that guy was elected president. But now, this year in 2013, Rouhani won just barely, 50% of the, over 50% of the vote. So Rouhani is a reformer and a progressive, even though he's been endorsed by the Ayatollah Khomeini, who, by the way, is a totally different guy than the last Ayatollah, Khomeini. this brings us to why the fuck are we in Iran? And obviously that's because the new guy in charge, Rouhani, is on the charm offensive, running around with roses trying to bachelorette the world.
Yeah, after years of emotional shutdown, now Iran wants to talk. So, and they want to talk about everything, their nuclear activities, their feelings.
That's right, yeah. The U.S. and Iran haven't talked in over 30 years, and suddenly Suddenly, Iran's drunk dialing President Obama at 3 in the morning trying to get back together.
Hello? Is it me you're looking for?
What are Obama and Rani talking about on these steamy late-night calls? And what are they going to talk about in these upcoming talks? Well, they're going to talk about Iran's nuclear weapons capability and sanctions. And when I have questions about nuclear weapons capability, I turn to our very own Benari Poulton, who just happens to be attached to a nuclear weapons unit in the U.S. Army Reserve.
Yes, lucky me. And of course, let me just say that my opinions are my own and in no way reflect the opinions of the United States Army or the U.S. government or pretty much anyone other than me.
Now who's the lawyer?
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, when I have legal questions, especially about sanctions and other legal stuff, I always turn to one guy for answers, and that's you, Kevin Janis. Let's talk about these sanctions.
Yeah, well, look, Iran claims it isn't trying to develop nuclear weapons, and Rouhani actually said Iran would never develop nuclear weapons. He said that. And that just seems nuts. So my first question for you is, what evidence do we have that Iran has a nuclear weapons program?
There's no real hard evidence. We're a little bit in the Rumsfeld conundrum. We're dealing with a rummy situation here. We don't know for sure that he has them, but we do know for sure that he doesn't not have them. So what we have are intelligence reports that Iran has the capability to make weapons, but not that they actually are making weapons. Here's the tricky part. Iran has their nuclear program, and they're proud of it, and they have something like 19 sites. On one of the sites, Parchin, it's a military base, and that's where Iran has built a large containment vessel for testing the feasibility of explosive compression. So basically, they just blow shit up, and then they test it. And the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that's the agency that monitors these programs, they've said that Iran has gone beyond theoretical studies about how to detonate a nuclear device, and it calls these tests strong indicators of possible weapon development. So last year, the agency sent inspectors there to clear up the matter one way or the other. And they've been doing this off and on for a couple of years, and Iran won't allow them access. And then when the agency really pushed and said, look, if you don't show us, if you don't open up the sites to us, we're going to report you, Iran kicked them out of the country. So the best evidence we have that Iran is developing weapons is that they won't let anyone even look at the place where everyone thinks that they're making the weapons.
Well, I mean, John Kerry said, you know, a country that wants to have a peaceful program does not have difficulty proving that it's peaceful.
Yeah.
But what if Iran actually agreed to open its nuclear facilities to inspectors? You know, what kind of evidence would UN investigators be looking for?
Well, again, you know, right now, what they're looking to do is just verify if what they think is going on is actually going on. So, you know, is Iran running these tests with the intention of creating their own weapons of mass destruction? And then they'd be looking at spikes in radioactivity, materials to make rockets, you know, that type of stuff. The important thing to note here, though, is that Iran's main problem is they're not allowing the International Atomic Energy Agency to conclusively verify their nuclear activities. So they are in non-compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Safeguards Agreement, and that's why the Security Council has ordered them to suspend their nuclear enrichment activities, and that's why they've imposed harsh sanctions on them.
Well, that's okay. So let's break this down, because you know, I'm not sure everyone knows this, but Iran is a signatory to the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. In fact, they signed it right away when it came into force back in 1970. They're one of the originals. Not even Israel has signed it.
Oh, well, great. So that's probably going to be one of Rouhani's bargaining chips. You know, if Iran wants to come to the table, they're going to want Israel to sign before they give up any of their stuff.
Well, Rouhani has said exactly that. It's one of Iran's conditions in any negotiations, that Israel sign the NPT. But let's take a step back, because here's Iran's argument.
Oh, well, here comes the lawyer.
I'm trying to provide some balance here. Iran argues that unlike Israel, okay, they're a card-carrying member of the NPT, and one of the three goals of the NPT is the the right to peacefully use nuclear energy. That's the key for Iran, right? That's what it says it's doing. It's peacefully, it's trying to peacefully use nuclear energy. And Iran, along with a lot of developing countries, say it's actually the nuclear powers like the U.S. that are the hypocrites, because the nuclear powers focus on the goal of preventing the spread of nukes at the expense of the other two goals of the treaty, which are disarming the nuclear powers and the peaceful use of nuclear energy. And so Iran and the developing countries say the nuclear powers have their weapons. They're not disarming, yet they're preventing other countries from developing nuclear energy. Plus, they say, you've got the U.S. and Israel teaming up in different clandestine ways to prevent Iran from pursuing nuclear energy, including assassinating Iran's nuclear scientists. R.I.P. Tom Clancy.
Okay, well, all right, enough of your legal zibzab here. As we've just stated, Iran won't open up their sites to prove that they're not making weapons, and they're in non-compliance with the NPT safeguards agreement. So, you know, I'm sorry, you signed the agreement, you got to abide by it.
Well, look, that's exactly what the UN and the world have been saying all these years, right? Iran signed the treaty, and they flagrantly violated it. So since 2006, the UN Security Council has imposed four rounds of sanctions against Iran in response to its nuclear program. And the world, particularly the U.S., have also implemented extremely harsh sanctions outside the UN system to punish Iran. And in July, the House passed even tougher new sanctions on Iran's oil sector and other industries, and those could be in place as early as November. So, and these sanctions have been so effective that they've arguably brought Iran to the table.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I'm not sure that the West will ever be able to feel 100% confident that Iran has truly dismantled its program, especially when you have all these critics of Iran, which includes Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. And these critics, you know, they're saying that Rouhani would promise anything to get the sanctions lifted, which have crippled Iran's economy. And that's probably what's really preventing any fully realized weapons program at this point, because making nuclear weapons is hella expensive. Right now, though, we don't even know if there's actually a weapons program to dismantle. So it looks like they're pursuing a weapons program, but they won't let us see what they're doing, and this could all be one big bluff.
Ripped right out of the Saddam Hussein playbook.
Totally.
Saddam Hussein!
I just think there's always going to be an element of distrust. And, you know, the key to any good faith agreement is the good faith part. But, you know, Secretary of State John Kerry just said basically, we don't trust these guys. We're going to negotiate with them, but we don't trust them.
Yeah, we're going to negotiate, but it's not based on trust.
Right. What did he say it's based on, though?
He said, well, here's what he said. Quote, he said, "Nothing we do is going to be based on trust. It's going to be based on steps."
Great. Perfect.
What does that mean? It's going to be based on steps. Our current goal is to be like Riverdance.
Yeah, step by step. We're in a Bobby Brown video, and this is our international negotiating policy now. Perfect. So I guess all of this is to say is we have a lot of unknowns here. So what the fuck does this really have to do with us? And by us, I mean the U.S.
Yeah, well, of course. Well, I mean, this is pretty simple in terms of, you know, what does it have to do with the U.S.? You're talking about nuclear weapons, right? I mean, this is kind of a big deal. But I also think you've got a potential diplomatic opening here for the U.S. And if they can find a way to deal with Iran, Iran has such an influence in the Middle East. You know, its tentacles are everywhere. I mean, if you can find a way to break through, you could really have a wide-ranging effect. Because, look, the bottom line is right now, they're just wreaking havoc everywhere.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Iran's biggest export next to oil is probably terrorism.
Look, that's a point Israel has made from time to time.
Oh, sure. Just because I'm Jewish, it has to be about Israel.
But look, speaking of which, okay, G.I. Jew, is this good for the Jews?
Well, that's the question I always ask. And the answer here is no. Well, maybe, but probably not. So to put it in a greater context, one thing to understand is that the Iranian parliament does have a Jewish member. And his name is Siamak More Sej. I believe that's how it's pronounced. I have no idea. But he represents Iran's Jewish community. And Iran actually has the second largest Jewish population in the Middle East outside of Israel. So there's a fun fact.
No, that is.
So in terms of secular Jews, in terms of Jews in the Middle East, you know, I think that there is definitely a connection there. And obviously it's going to have an impact on Jews in the region. Now, Rouhani brought this guy with him to the UN as part of his charm offensive to show that Iran doesn't really hate Jews. So that's good. This is a step in the right direction, probably. One thing to point out about this Sej guy is he's aggressively anti-Zionist and anti-Israel. So he's probably a good Jew to bring along with you, because another fun fact, Iran hates Israel. And Israel isn't really too keen on Iran.
I was going to throw that in there too.
You know, there's a yin and a yang, and the yin and yang both agree that they hate each other. Netanyahu has actually called Rouhani a wolf in sheep's clothing, and although he didn't use a cartoon bomb this time in front of the UN, he has stated that under no circumstances would Israel allow Iran to have nuclear capabilities. And of course, a few days ago, Israel just captured an Iranian spy in Tel Aviv, so this whole thing is probably not going to end that well. So that's what it has to do with the Jews. But we'll take a wait and see see how it shakes out. But of course, you know, that's the Jewish perspective. What I want to know, and I think what everyone wants to know, is what is Canada doing about all of this? Kevin, you're a Canuck. Tell us about Canada.
Well, look, Canadians are still reeling from that smear job Batfleck did on us in Argo. I mean, that's ridiculous. Canada does all the work. Then 30 years later, some CIA guy who wasn't even in Iran for the first months of the crisis writes a book, and suddenly the Canadian caper is now being called Argo? So the U.S. gets credit for the whole thing now? Can you not let us have credit for anything? The CIA comes up with this crackpot sci-fi movie scheme to smuggle out the hostages. Tony Mendez gets to go around Hollywood having fun at parties making up fake movies. Meanwhile, the Canadian ambassador's on the ground, Ken Taylor. He's taking all the risk by harboring these guys. And so does Canadian John Sheridan, who wasn't even mentioned in the movie. They're the ones in danger of being killed. Meanwhile, Canada's doing all the work, forging official documents, creating false paper trails, concocting phony backstories. Ken Taylor drove him to the airport, yet somehow the movie turns into an American cloak and dagger flick about the CIA making fun of how Canada got any credit for it. Then, after it's shown at the Toronto Film Festival and Canadian audiences lose it, Batfleck agrees to tack on a flimsy "Thanks, Canada" at the end.
Well, you know, I think that was appropriate. Sounds like you were a big fan of the movie.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, there's Canada for you. There you go.
So, look, wrapping up, verdict for Canada, thumbs down. Verdict for the Jews, thumbs down. Verdict for the U.S., to be determined. It's unclear.
Big thumbs up. Go fuck yourself. USA! USA!
Well, like, only time will tell if Iran is serious or they're just using talks as a stalling tactic to buy more time to develop nukes. But hopefully we've helped you understand a little bit about where the fuck we are. Now we have to see how the fuck is this going to turn out.
And if history is any guide, badly.
A huge thanks and shout out to Shelley Lewis, our executive producer in charge of all producing, and our sound engineer, Greg Russ.
He's in charge of all sounding. Please don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at WTFAW Show. And please follow us at Kevin Janis and at Ben Ari Lee.
I'm Kevin Janis.
I'm Ben Ari Poulton.
Tune in next time where we try to figure out where the fuck are we?
Boom, that was another episode of WTFAW. Where the F are we? sub it in for Cheater on the Rude. You guys listen up. The final edition is coming up next. It is an awesome, awesome episode. Check it out. Please spread the word about the final edition, thefinaledition.com, the final edition radio. This is Jeff Grasso. This has been Cheater on the Rude. You guys have been fantastic. This is Progressive Radio Network. We've got a catchphrase and I don't know it.